The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We've got a great show for you today. In this half hour of the show, we're going to be interviewing Rabbi Shmuel Kaplan, who has come out with Volume 2 of Siddur im Panini HaChassidus, the Siddur illuminated by Hasidic philosophy. Awesome. It's very rare I actually say that a tome, a volume, is like should be on every shelf, but this is one of them. We have lots and lots and lots of wonderful music for you during the sprinkled throughout the hour. The portion of the week is the portion of Vayechi. We're in chapter 49 and following in the book of Exodus, right to the book of Genesis, of course. Very captivating story. I wouldn't exactly call it a Hasidic story, but it's very poignant for right now. We do that right at the end. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Arab terrorists launched 169 terrorist attacks against Israelis in the last 120 days, killing 22 people and injuring 252. Of those, 21 were injured seriously. Following a car attack in Jerusalem that injured 14 people, and one of them, a little baby, lost his leg, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu decided to place concrete barriers at 300 bus stations around the capital from preventing such attacks from reoccurring. Israel and Turkey reached preliminary agreement to renew normal relations. The agreement would include the reinstatement of ambassadors in both countries, that neither one has had an ambassador in each other's country since 2010. Under the agreement, Israel will pay the families of the 10 Turks killed by Israeli forces on the Mavi Marmara back in 2010, that they tried to break the blockade and started beating up on Israeli soldiers and were killed. The bar mitzvah ceremony of Naor Shalev ben Ezra was held at the Western Wall in Jerusalem this past Thursday. Naor was a victim of a stabbing attack in the Israeli capital 2 months ago. The 13-year-old, along with a 25-year-old Israeli man, were stabbed by two Arab boys, 13 and 15, on October 12th in the Pisgat Zeb neighborhood of Jerusalem. Doctors say it's a miracle that Naor survived his wounds, and let's hope he lives happily ever after, and he should grow up to be a beacon of light unto the nations. A Manhattan Superior Judge ordered a federal commission to prove why Jonathan Pollard needs to have extra restrictive probation. The Justice Department argued that the majority of the information Mr. Pollard had 30 years ago still remains classified. And finally, go union. The United Auto Workers International, the UAW, struck down a boycott resolution against Israel by the University of California Student Workers Union, UAW Local 2865, which represents more than 13,000 teaching assistants, tutors, and other student workers in the UC system. The UAW International Executive Board stated its unanimous beliefs that the BDS movement espouses discrimination and vilification against Israelis and UAW members who are of Jewish lineage. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herr Schulfenman, you are listening to the Jewish Hour. We have on the line Rabbi Shmuel Kaplan, who is the head shliach, the head Lubavitcher emissary, and serving in the state of Maryland, recently came out with volume 2 of the Siddur Illuminated by Chassidus. How are you today, Rabbi Kaplan?
Thank God, wonderful.
This is absolutely great that you have the opportunity to take it. We're really happy that you're joining us. I want to back up, before we start talking about this specific work, I want to talk about how Judaism views prayer. If you could just give us a history of the development of the prayer book as we have it today.
Well, there really are two origins to the prayers. The first is hints that we find in the Torah itself. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Abraham prayed in the morning, Isaac in the afternoon, and Jacob in the evening, which makes up the three prayers. This was relied upon when the temple was destroyed and our sages realized that it was necessary for every individual to assume the responsibility of divine service, whereas before it was done in the temple on behalf of all of the Jewish people, now it had to be a personal, individual activity. And so they enacted the three basic prayers of Shacharis in the morning, Mincha in the afternoon, and Maariv in the evening, and found the source in the Torah that this is what Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob did. So that's really where our prayers come from. What prayer is, it's a private meeting with God. We have busy lives, and God has given us the opportunity three times a day through the institution of Tefillah and our sages to have a personal private meeting. And when you're going into a meeting with God himself, or we can take at least some kind of analogy from an important individual, the meeting is not just to discuss a certain item or make a request. It's a communication. We know today that communication is a multifaceted, a multi-layered process. You have the verbal part of it. You have the physical cues that we have. We have the tone of voice, and then we have the emotion that's expressed through the voice. All of these are part of the structure of prayer. So when we pray to God, we have to understand it's not simply recitation of words. It's the posture and stature that we have, has to be a certain way. And then there is the tone of voice, the emotion that we're feeling at the time that's expressed through the voice and through the words and their meaning and deeper layers of meaning that we have in the words of prayer.
Okay, that's awesome.
You know, you give a rabbi a microphone, you don't expect a short answer.
I was actually expecting a much longer answer, to tell you the truth, Rabbi Kaplan. So let's jump up a couple of centuries. The Baal Shem Tov, the founder of the Hasidic movement and the divisor of Hasidic philosophy, really put a lot of emphasis on prayer that wasn't there over the previous millennia. What was the nuance of the Baal Shem Tov in prayer?
Well, over the course of time, because our prayer is a repetition of the same words that we say day in and day out, it has a tendency to become quite mechanical and rote. And the Baal Shem Tov wanted to re-infuse it with the energy and emotion that prayer really should have. So that was the Baal Shem Tov's focus, and that's an area where everybody can participate. When you have intellectual study, so some are more capable and some have less endowed by God with that ability. Some have opportunity, some don't have opportunity. But prayer is an obligation to everybody, and it is the service to God. So everybody can equally engage and interact with God through prayer. So the Baal Shem Tov made that universal and said that anybody who has proper intent and feeling in prayer, that's an elevated form of prayer. And you don't have to be a scholar or a rabbi or some kind of extraordinary individual. You just have to be genuine and sincere and not to be afraid to express it. We live in a society where we don't express much emotion. I won't go into why and what, but we are reticent about letting emotion be revealed unless, you know, very, very, very controlled or private moments. The fact is that the human being is an emotional creature as much as we are intellectual creatures, and we should engage in an emotional process and not be ashamed of our emotions, particularly when it comes to prayer, and express it and show our emotions. That's part of what our interaction relationship with God is.
Okay. Now, the men of the Great Assembly, when they started formulating the prayer book some 2,500 years ago, they had to base their prayers on biblical writings. You can't just like make up something. It has to be based on something. When you said that a person has to pray with proper intent, what vehicle, what mode did the men of the Great Assembly put into the prayer book so as to that it should be able to take the place of the daily sacrifices which were offered in the temple, Rabbi Kaplan?
Mm-hmm. Well, first, I use this as a our sages, when they were establishing the form of prayer, were the greatest plagiarists of all time. There is hardly an original word in all of our prayers. It's all taken from our biblical scriptures. So it may not be in exactly the same form because it has to fit into the flow of a prayer, but it's just word by word by word is lifted out of the biblical sources and put together, strung together in a way in which it enables us to express our feeling and our relationship with God. Now, some people feel that if you recite the same prayer day in and day out, that it is a limitation and of necessity becomes sort of a rote mechanical prayer. It's not really true. It's just the opposite. If you have to create original words to communicate with God, then your whole focus becomes on formulating the words, choosing the right words, which is a difficult thing to do. I mean, we have people that are talented in writing, and even then, talented in writing, so it can take you hours or days to put together something which is both intellectually intelligent and emotionally satisfying. You know, take, for example, you have songwriters that spend who knows how much time to put in a few words some kind of feeling and emotion. It doesn't just pop into a person's head, and the same applies to intellectual content. However, when you already have a pre-selected text, so you don't need to worry about the formulation of the words. What you do need is to understand them and to feel them. So it really it's a freeing process, and it's an enabler so that we don't have to be distracted by different things, and we simply focus on saying those words which we are familiar with and those words which we hopefully have a basic understanding of, and then we have to just put ourselves into it, put our thoughts and our feelings into it. That's a much easier process than trying to start from scratch.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Now, so you talk about basic understanding. The idea of praying in the vernacular, does it exist in Judaism? Do people have to pray in the original Hebrew?
No. Prayer is acceptable in any language that we are able. But again, as the advantage of praying in the words, in biblical words, is that these are God's words. I mean, we can only express a single thought in a single set of words. In biblical words, especially in Hebrew words, we can express far, far more. The levels and depths that you have within Hebrew words is infinite. So utilizing the words that our sages have put out in the prayer just enables us to have a multifaceted view of prayer and to keep on growing within the meaning of prayer as opposed to simply saying the words that we can understand. Let me just explain this a little bit further.
Go ahead.
Hebrew and English are very, very different. English is an extremely rich language, a million plus words in English. And because of that, every nuance of meaning has a different word. We choose words very, very carefully. I mean, they do change over time in nuance, but there's a word that means this kind of thing, a word that means just a little bit this, and a word that means just a little bit this. Each word has a very slight variation because we have so many words for each thing. Then Hebrew is the other way around. Hebrew has a very limited number of words. And in addition, Hebrew is built on a shoresh, on root words system, which means that every word, the context, will express the nuance of its meaning, not necessarily the word itself. And then you have relationship between words, where because words share a same root, they have a integral relationship. So once you have this kind of language, and you're reading a sentence, it's not just a sentence. It's a sentence, so there's a context, and you can push the context one way or a little bit this way or a little bit that way, and then you can get into a whole deeper layer of meaning. Then you can associate words to different words, and you have another level of meaning. You keep going, drilling down into these variations of meanings of the words and their phrases and the sentences. And it's just an endless source of information, knowledge, understanding, and inspiration.
Mm-hmm. I'm not one to resort to bifurcation. I hate putting either or situations. But so then would you say it's better for a person to stumble through the Hebrew and rely on what the authors had intended? Or is it better to do it in English and feel something out of it personally, Rabbi Shmuel Kaplan?
Well, I can dodge that one pretty quickly if you just divide some of this and some of this.
Okay.
Well, for example, the Shema should be said in the original Hebrew. The Shemona Esrei should be said in the if you can, in the original Hebrew. The other parts, which I would encourage the person to, if that's what gives you more feeling in the prayers, to recite it in English. But again, it's determined by where a person gets more out of it and how you're able to put more into a prayer or feeling into a prayer. There are, for many people who are familiar with the Hebrew language, even if they don't know the meanings, but the cadence and flow of the Hebrew language just helps them feel and express themselves. So even if they don't know the precise meaning of every word, that's adequate for them. So that if that's the case, certainly the choice is Hebrew. There's no question about that the choice is Hebrew. But where it's a choice between reading Hebrew, which I don't understand and doesn't mean anything to me, doesn't do anything for me, and reading in English, where I feel some degree of emotional attachment and relationship to it, then certainly I would recommend the English.
Mm-hmm. Good, understood. Now, we talk about the Baal Shem Tov and the Baal Shem Tov's emphasis with putting on prayer, the Baal Shem Tov being the founder of the Hasidic philosophy. We see there's different styles of prayer, even among Hasidim. Here in Detroit, once a year, the Stolner Rebbe comes for the yahrzeit of his grandfather, and they always daven mincha. They have to do the afternoon prayers. And it's thunderous. They put a lot of emotion in. They're moving, they're shaping, shaking, they're bipping and bopping. They're all over the place. There is a lot of energy. Whereas with Chabad, with Lubavitch, it's more of a still thing. So could you explain, not as either one better because everyone has their own, but why is there and how is it that we have these different styles and approaches to prayer?
In the Chabad, because we are intellectually based, Chabad is primarily a philosophical system, the emotion that we express or feel is guided and controlled by the intellectual understanding and content of the prayer. And that's why it's not as outwardly not outwardly evident as would be in others, where they are using the outward expression to generate some degree of feeling. So you want to feel. So there's two things that you can do. One is you can just act it out, and when you act it out, it helps the activity helps generate some degree of feeling. There's another way is to think it through and think of why you should be inspired, and that leads you to an inspiration. So that's really two different ways of coming at emotion. Now, since I am Chabad, obviously I'm going to give preference preference would be the word to the prayer which is based on understanding, to understand the prayers, to imagine the words of the prayers, and to experience the words of prayer through the mind. I think that's one which is a surefire way. If you have it, you can do it, and it's genuine, it lasts, it's impactful. Whereas the other, I believe, is not as productive, if you will, in the final result.
Okay, understood. If you're just joining us, our guest today is Rabbi Shmuel Kaplan, who is the Rebbe's emissary to the state of Maryland, has composed and comprised, put together a Siddur, the Illuminated by Hasidic Prayer Book. This is Volume 2, which includes in it the Sabbath prayers. Could you tell the impetus why there's a need? Why is it that what spurred you on to doing this? Like, I can see by looking at this is a lot of work that went into this and took up a lot of time. So why did you feel there was a need for such a work, Rabbi Kaplan?
Well, we're living in a different kind of society today where people don't have the time and the expertise to be able to extract all of the interpretations of prayer that are found throughout the Hasidic literature. There are thousands and thousands of interpretations. A lot of Hasidic philosophy really bases itself on verses and phrases in the prayers. And we do see that the art of prayer is declining. Chabad Hasidim, particularly in Europe, were well known, and they were really distinguished by the fact that they prayed for hours on end, even alone, not necessarily with a congregation. And that meditative, reflective, and very profound prayer is something which requires a lot of effort, training, and time. And in our modern society, it's very difficult for people to do that in general. And so, you know, prayer has become just what we know, what the criticisms are. It's you get to shul, you mumble through the prayers, and you get out, and that's it. You may know that the Baltimore is famous for horse racing, the Preakness race, part of the Triple Crown of horse racing.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens to be in our neighborhood. It's not more than a mile from my shul where the race takes place, and we hear all the tumult and the excitement that goes on around the race always on Shabbat. So we're not there, we're in a synagogue, but I feel some need to relate to it in some way. And so one year I said that we should learn a very important lesson from the horse race, and that's the lesson of how not to daven. When a horse begins the race, the only thing the horse is thinking of is getting to the end. And unfortunately, many people, when it comes to prayer, have the same attitude. They start the prayer, and the only thing is, how quickly can I get to the end? That's for horses. That's not for human beings, and it's not for prayer. Prayer is a slow, deliberative process that you have to engage in. So the only way to do that is to engage the mind. If the mind is one place and the mouth is mouthing something else, then obviously it's rote and there's no feeling, there's nothing. It's just almost an empty recitation of words. So you have to engage the mind. The way you engage the mind is not simply by knowing the meaning of the words, because some of them are arcane and some of the meanings are not evident, because it's more of a poetic form and style that our prayer is, and the meanings are not that evident. The surface meanings, okay, I said God is great. Now, how many times do I got to say God is great? Yes, but this God is great is not the same as this one, because this is in this context, that's in this context, this is being said in this way, and this is being said that way. But all of if you don't know that, it doesn't catch the mind. Whereas if you know deeper layers of meaning, then as you pray, your mind is engaged in thinking about these things, and that draws you into the prayer, and it draws, if you focus on it, it draws your, not just your mind, but then comes with it is your feeling that you express in prayer. So it's really a key to enter into the true process of prayer. And I felt that even within our Hasidic community, it was becoming less prevalent and less practiced. And so I felt the need to create this collection. We did have a staff of almost 10 people that worked on it over a period of 5 years to produce these two books. And what we have is a couple of thousand interpretations, deeper meanings to verses in the prayer. So it's not necessarily a book that you pick up for easy reading, but if you're interested and you pick up a little piece here, a little piece there, just these little pieces on occasion have a tendency to create a whole different atmosphere in your prayer. And I can tell you that from personal experience. You can't get involved in this kind of thought process without it completely changing the way you pray on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now I'm going to talk about the setup of this book. What you have is in the inside of the page, meaning like closer to the fold where the pages come together. You have a smaller edition of the sitter, and then around it on the outside of it, you have lots and lots and lots of commentary.
But there's also a translation, and that is actually a new translation. Mm-hmm. We have built on the previous translations of the Siddur. This one is particularly adept in terms of being readable, and you can extract the meaning from it. I do think, although I will say this is not my work. I did not do that translation, but I chose the people that did it, and I do believe they have done a masterful piece of work.
Mm-hmm. So this is not the translation that came out back in 1978?
No, it's a new translation.
Okay, very good. I didn't realize that. So, but now, I was led to believe that the Lubavitcher Rebbes, the leaders of the Lubavitcher movement, were against people praying from these prayer books that have all these commentaries on them, because the time of prayer is not a time for learning about the prayers, and that actually takes away from the prayers. So would you like to see people using this to actually pray from, or is this supposed to be like a textual thing, Rabbi Kaplan?
You're hitting on an interesting point. Yes, it's not this is not a siddur which you want to daven, and you open it up and say, okay, now I'm going to daven, and I'm going to somehow, no. You go through it, and what I have suggested in the introduction to the first one is that when you read a piece and you think about it and you understand it, that you make a little mark there. Of that piece, and then when you get to that piece, when you're davening, when you're actually doing the prayers, you have a reminder to think about that little piece, and you think about it for a moment as you go through it. Mm-hmm. So you're not it needs preparation beforehand. This is not a book that you pick up. Oh, I need a prayer book. Here's the prayer book. I mean, you can do that because it's got the text there. You can say it, but that's not its purpose. Its purpose is you use it as a study guide. And each one of the deeper commentaries that it has a source of where it comes from. I also recommend that if you're attracted to a particular piece, that you go back to the source and you study it in the original source. Then you understand its larger context. And then make that mark. You come back and you daven. You see the mark. It reminds you. You spend a few moments thinking about it. If you do that on a regular basis, before long, you don't need the reminder. You've got it already. It just comes naturally to you, and you go on to another piece and another piece. And you build on that over the course of time. Over the course of some months or 6 months or a year, you will have acquired a sufficient amount of deeper understanding that you can move to any sitter you want, and these things will just come to you while you're davening.
That's awesome. This is Volume 2. Volume 1 came out a couple of years ago. I'm assuming that Volume 1 was very well received because that's why Volume 2 came out. Is that correct?
Yes, we sold out the first printing in 6 months. We went to a second printing, and we're just about sold out with the second printing.
Okay. Have you seen an effect in your own synagogue? I'm assuming that, since you're the person who put this together, that this would have an effect on people in your personal congregation. Have you seen anything like that, Rabbi Kaplan?
You're putting me on the spot. So I've got to struggle with that because I have my synagogue, the congregants of my synagogue, are all observant people with yeshiva backgrounds, and I'm really trying to change their whole view of prayer and how they've been trained for 20, 30, 40, 50 years. That's not an easy job to do. It's so ingrained in most Orthodox people that you get into shul and you go, and get through the end, and that's what it is. And now someone comes along and says, no, it's a whole different story. It's not easy for people to do that, but I do emphasize it a lot, and I would say maybe 15-20% of my congregants have made some serious effort at acquiring some knowledge through the Siddur, and no question about it, it's changed. Everybody tells me that you can't daven the same way once you've spent some time with the Siddur.
Oh, that's good. That's really great.
So we should put a warning sign on it.
Reading this book might change your life.
Right.
Okay, fair enough. One last question before we have to go. You spent a lot of time now investigating in-depth research about the prayers. Is there any one prayer that kind of like grabbed you the most that sort of became your favorite prayer, Rabbi Kaplan?
Well, I'm going to use this opportunity as to promote something else. I do have a series of 50 classes on Chabad.org going through the entire prayer. We're actually up to Olenu right now. There'll be the 51st will be the Olenu. So if you want to get my personal instruction, the Chabad.org has on its videos, it has a series of 50 lectures. Each one is approximately a half hour, which goes through from the first prayer all the way through them. What is my favorite prayer? That's a tough one. You know, which is my favorite grandchild?
Mm-hmm.
I would say Psalm 148 is probably my favorite psalm.
Okay.
What
grabs you about it?
Well, I have to give you a bit of a lecture here. The way it's put together, it's put together of three different segments, and it deals with the spiritual worlds, the heavenly bodies, and from the world it goes from up, down, up. And there's a structure there which is so magnificent that people would only realize what went into the production of that, and the depth of the philosophical thought that goes through that that psalm. I could give you a class for 3-4 hours to explain that psalm.
Okay, and I see that's in your Siddur, and there's a whole lot of stuff written on it. Is the stuff that you wrote? There's a lot of stuff that's repeated from weekday to Sabbath. Is it the same?
Not necessarily. No. We inserted a lot of additions. There were a lot of things we did not put into the first volume. I mean, the space is limited, so we stuff which we omitted in the first volume, we put into the Shabbat volume where we are repeating. For example, the Pesukei Dezimra, the Psalms. So there is other things that have been put in there.
Okay, that's terrific.
And that's a way to argue that you buy both of them, not just one.
And it looks very good on the shelf, too. It's very smartly done, and your graphic designer, the person who did the layout and the paging and the binding and the cover, it's a terrific volume. Again, our guest today has been Rabbi Shmuel Kaplan, who is the head shliach, the head Lubavitch emissary of the state of Maryland. Just recently released is The Siddur Illuminated by Chassidus, the Shabbos Services. This is Volume 2. I recommend getting Volume 1 and Volume 2 and have them on your shelf and go into it and see what prayer is all about. Thank you so much, Rabbi Kaplan. This has
You're
been
welcome.
Awesome.
Pleasure.
We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
The Art Studio of Oak Park is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park has something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Herr Schulterman, here you're listening to the Jewish Hour. We have, this is now a little time for some music now. This is Barry Weber. We've had him on before. He's actually become very prolific. He's coming out with new stuff probably monthly at this point. This piece is called Nigun Lev, which means a heartfelt melody. It has no words. And this is the type of thing that a person who really wants to get involved with prayer would, he would stop and think, and while he was thinking, would sing such a song. Let's listen in.
I did it, I did it, I did it, I like lie. I did it, I did it, I did it, I like lie. I did it, I did it, I did it, I like lie. I did it, I did it, I did it, I like lie. Oh, yo, did it, I like lie. Oh, yo, did it, I like lie.
Want assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale. The Jewish Hour. This is now time for our klezmer segment. This is also brand new. This is the krake, which does not mean, I thought it was Krakow, but it's not. It's the krake. They're from someplace in Eastern Europe, somewhere, Ukraine or Slovenia or Bulgaria. Didn't identify themselves, but they're not from Krakow. It's the Krake Klezmer Trio, and this song is simply called Freilachs. It's a happy tune.
Freilachs,
or someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox. Hey, Shel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. We got time for one more. I recently met in my pursuits of promoting Jewish Ferndale, met a person who is a very big Shlomo Carlebach fan, and so I told him that I will play him Shlomo Carlebach today. So for Joel, this one is for you. This is Shlomo Carlebach, 1992, I think it is, in Antwerp, which is where the concert was, and it's Baruch Inafshi, which means bless my soul.
Join me, friends.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. Herr Schulfen, here you're listening to the Jewish Hour. This week we are ending the book of Genesis in the synagogue with a portion of Vayechi, chapter 48 and following. Jacob made a last request to Joseph. Joseph, of course, is the number two man. He's the vice king in Egypt. And Jacob said, "Swear to me that you are not going to bury me here in Egypt, but rather bury me back with my grandparents and my parents and my wife, Leah, back in Hebron. That's where I want to be buried." And Joseph had to do some, you know, fancy footwork to get it arranged, but he got it arranged. Joseph, on the other hand, at the end of the book, it's chapter 50, makes the Jewish people promise that when they leave, they're going to take his remains with them. He didn't say, "Oh, by the way, I want to be buried in Israel too. Don't bury me here in Egypt." What's the difference? The difference is between isolationism and integration. Both of them have their merits and their deficiencies. But when you put the two together, I guess we'd have to make up a word make a mash of isolation and integrationist. Would you call it isogrationism? Yes, we could do that. I don't know if anybody would understand you. But Egypt was the exact antithesis to Israel. Israel was called the Holy Land, and Egypt was called Ervas Haaretz, basically loosely translated the pits or the bowels of the earth. And what was going on in there with the idolatry and immorality and all the other depravity that was rife through the culture. Jacob lived in Goshen. He didn't want any part of Egyptian culture. He didn't even want to have his bones like in the ground over there. Oh, disgusting. Okay? He was an isolationist. He said, "We have to be removed from that. We have to be above that. We have to stay away from that." Joseph, he was right there. He lived in downtown Egypt, wherever the capital was at that time. He was controlling the economy. He was setting the tone. Because his opinion was that it's not to be removed from, but it's to be worked with and elevated. And both of them have their places. Both of them have their times. And indeed, we can say that keeping in mind that the ultimate goal is this isolationism. In other words, become integrated right now. Go and work in the society in which we are now with the purpose of attaining and achieving a level that integration should become isolationist. That we should elevate it so that the profane and the defamed and the immoral shall be raised to the level of holiness. So we need to have both. We need to have Jacob with his disdain for Egyptian culture. And we need to have Joseph, who was wanting to work and elevate it. So that now, with our own personal lives, what is it that we're trying to do? We should look at what's important. The acquisition of stuff, it's not important. Because what happens to stuff, for the most part? Eventually it winds up on the curb. It may take a little longer. Some people might say, "Oh, this is so heavy." For the most part, it winds up on the curb and becomes landfill. That's what stuff is. But when you have stuff, that's fine. We're not saying don't have stuff. We're saying have the stuff. But realize that stuff is in order to facilitate achieving a higher level of holiness. We have to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. Don't go away. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Specs Howard from the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for The Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep The Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Herschel Finman, you're listening to The Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? RabbiFinman.com. I've talked about it every week. I talk about it, what's on there, archived editions of the show, and the e-partial, the u-partial, all different things, good things you'll find over there. Donations page. We're still trying to pay off December. We need to. It's almost January. Go to the computer, RabbiFinman.com. Donate today. A lot of donations came in this week. We're almost there for December, but we got January coming up now. And, no, actually, we have to pay for November, too. We're like 2 months behind. Yeah, I'm not even keeping track anymore. Let the people here are. So, yeah, we need you to do that. Step up to the plate so we can do that. Don't like doing that? Send your donations to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. We do have time. We have a little bit of time for the story. Let me see if I can condense this story for you. There was a certain Rabbi Shlomo Lawrence who was a member of Knesset, of the Israeli parliament, back in 1948, and went to visit then President Harry Truman. And Truman told him, why is it that we recognized the state of Israel? He said when he was a kid, he was known as what's known in the vernacular as a Shabbos Goy. There were religious Jews who couldn't work on Sabbath, and he would go into their houses when they needed him to turn on lights, turn off ovens, to these type of things. And he got an appreciation of the Jewish people, and he really liked and appreciated what the Jews were offering to the world. His father, who was a very religious person, would read stories from the Bible. And he read him the story from the book of Daniel about Koresh, Cyrus, who allowed the Jewish people to go back to their land. And he decided, one day, I'm going to be president, and I'm going to let the Jews go back to their land. So he said that when Ben-Gurion came and presented him with a Torah, he knew that he was fulfilling his boyhood dream. As he says, the terrible threat of atomic warfare will continue to threaten the world with destruction, and with worse still, leaving all the world's inhabitants in a state worse than simple death. And if despite this, the will to continue living persists within me, it is only because I believe that just as you Jews saved humanity, a barbarous species, 3,000 years ago with your Torah, today too the Jewish people will manage to enlighten and heal the cruel hearts of our age and rescue the world from total destruction. And those are the words of Harry Truman. That's going to do it for us. Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. Take care.